Locked On NBA, the biggest stories, the local experts. Every Monday, we dig into the biggest stories in the NBA with the Locked On Podcast Network hosts. Today, we'll stop in New York to speak with James Merceda of Locked On Knicks about the Joakim Noah stretch and wave, about David Fizdale's preseason performance and the point guard battle for the Knicks. We'll go to San Antonio to speak with Jeff Garcia of Locked On Spurs about all of the injuries in the San Antonio Spurs backcourt. And lastly, we go to Miami to speak with Wes Goldberg of Locked On Heat about the Justice Winslow extension, Pat Riley's comments, and the Jimmy Butler trade negotiations. It's all coming up, the biggest stories with the local experts on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hi, guys, and welcome back to Locked On NBA. It's another Monday edition of the show. I am your Monday host, Josh Lloyd. I'm also the host over at Locked On Fantasy Basketball, and I'm the lead analyst at BasketballMonster.com. Find me on Twitter at RedRock_BBall. Just a day, 2 days away from the NBA season kicking off, depending on when you're listening to this. Lots of stuff happening, as per usual. We're going to talk about all the big stories in today's show, so let's get to it. I'm joined now by the host of the Locked On Knicks podcast. It is James Merceda. James, back on the show, some interesting things developing in Knicks world at the moment. Let's start with the news over the weekend that Joakim Noah is being waived by the team, something that I guess was being touted for quite a while. But what's the general, I guess, reaction there? Is it something that was seen as necessary? How much is this costing the Knicks in terms of cap space moving forward?
So, you know, this year they're eating the entire salary, and then what they're doing is they're stretching the final year of his contract next season, which was slated for around $18 million over the three seasons after this year. So they'll be on the hook for a little over $6 million for those next three seasons. I don't think it's the ending that anyone had in mind. I don't think it's the ending that anyone wanted, whether that's the Knicks organization or Joakim Noah himself. I don't love it, but I also don't hate it, and I understand. In order to get rid of that contract, the Knicks would have had to give up a pretty good asset. We're talking like a first-round pick, probably with, you know, minimal protection on it. And that's something that I personally would not have wanted to do, especially as the cap rises. That $6 million is a little bit less onerous going forward. And there's the other thing you have to consider here is you don't really know what's going on behind the scenes here. Now, the Knicks have other veteran players. They're going to play Lance Thomas. They're going to play Courtney Lee. You know, they might try to trade him for cap space too. But with these other guys, they're not running into the same issue where they got to get Noah off the team. I personally think this is just speculation that what was going on behind the scenes with him, some behavioral things. We know he got into basically a physical or near physical altercation with Jeff Hornacek last year. Was not my favorite coach, but that kind of thing is never a good look. So you're kind of assuming, if you're looking on the bright side for the Knicks and hoping that their front office knows what they're doing, you're assuming that there's some stuff going on there that they can't really say, and that getting him away now, while not a great option in terms of the cap, not the worst. They get to develop the young guys in peace. They get to use that roster spot to hopefully churn through some of these kind of, like, you know, up-and-coming guys or some of these second draft guys they've got, like the Hazonias of the world, see if they can, you know, get – jumpstart some of these guys' careers. So not the ending anyone wanted, but I don't think this is like a typical Knicksian disaster, you know, of days of old. If you're looking at the history of this organization, I think it's something that is explainable, if not ideal.
We'll move on from the Joakim Noah, you know, saga, which I guess is done now. That chapter's out of the Knicks, I guess, past and their future now. But there's been some interesting things happen throughout the preseason with this team. The starting point guard battle at the time of recording is still up in the air between Trey Burke and Frank Ntilikina. I think, hopefully, thankfully and hopefully, that Emmanuel Mudiay is out of that race. But there's been, you know, some play from both of those guys, Burke and Ntilikina, that's been positive. Is there any indication as to which way Fizdale is leaning? We've heard him come out and say that None of them, regardless of who starts, no one's going to be playing big minutes because of this supposed up-tempo style that he's going with. But is there any way that you think that he is leaning at the moment with that point guard position?
Yeah, I think if you try to read the tea leaves, that looking like Burke's going to start, but I don't feel 100% on that. The only reason I say that is because he keeps talking about Ntilikina's versatility. He likes the ability that he gives him to play him at different spots in the lineup. He can guard 1-3 pretty easily, or at least very well. I don't know how easy it is for him, but he's very successful so far defensively against those positions. He's even playing up against 4 a little bit on some switches. So when he's talking about his versatility and likes that look he gives him, he also says that Burke is like a point guard. That's what he is. Obviously, Burke is very short. Ntilikina is very tall. He's 6'6", so he can move around a little bit. We've got Knox, who they've already said is pretty much locked into that small forward spot. Hardaway Jr., he's still got a pretty good contract, and let's face it, he's their best perimeter offensive threat right now. He's going to play the two. So I have a feeling that Burke is going to start at point guard. I think that Ntilikina has done enough to get that starting nod. He's played well in preseason. He showed himself to be a defensive menace. The argument that you might make against that is that, look, these guys are all going to get minutes, and lineups are a little bit balanced if Ntilikina comes off the bench, because you've got Burke, who figures to play big minutes. You've got Alonzo Trier, who's making a play for minutes in preseason. Both these guys are kind of their only guys who can get into the lane, and you might want to sort of stagger them to get their dribble penetration in both the starting unit and the bench unit, and you don't want them to play with each other because they're not great defenders. So all these things considered, if I had to bet money, I'd bet it on Burke. I think Ntilikina deserves it, quite frankly. And as someone who they should be investing in his future, I'd like to see him get it. I want to see him practicing, you know, that role as a starter that is different than coming off the bench, obviously. But I also don't think it's a disaster if he doesn't start. And, I mean, we'll see. We really don't know. Fizdale's really keeping us on the edge of our seats with this one.
The thing that Fizdale has been really, really adamant about and continuing to push in any sort of media that he does is pace. You know, I'm going to go super up-tempo. I'm going to go be going crazy fast. In preseason, how much of that did we see? Because when his only full season in charge of a team as a head coach of the Grizzlies in 16-17, the team was the 28th in the NBA in pace, with according to Basketball Reference, 92.3 possessions, which is extraordinarily slow. Now, we expect a jump up. Now, some of that might be the Grizzlies organization putting that on him. Hey, you have to play slow for whatever marketing purposes they may have, and I don't actually discount that, because I think that's legitimately part of what happened. But did we see that from Fizdale in the preseason? Were they going at this breakneck speed that he continues to tout that they're going to be doing through the regular season?
We actually did. I don't have those numbers off the top of my head, but they're already playing at a much faster pace than they did last year with Hornacek. They were something like 17th in the league, and now they were 10th in preseason. Again, take those numbers with a grain of salt. But just anecdotally, watching all their preseason games, he is yelling at them to push off misses, even push off a makes. And he's made a couple comments about, you know, he's not going to play guys more than like 28 minutes a game. If they're playing, 30 minutes, they're probably not as tired as they should be. They're not giving the effort that they should be during those first 28 minutes, because he wants them really pushing. So I've seen it. It looks like the numbers support that, although I don't have those handy. But so far, he has been true to his word there, I think.
That was interesting, that comment he made about them playing only 28 minutes. But I do actually think that's going to be realistic. Like someone like Tim Hardaway or Kevin Knox, you can see it easily with the point guards in the battle there. You can see it with Lance Thomas at power forward, who's going to be the starter at power forward. And Mario Hezonja's not going to get 30 minutes. Enes Kanter's not going to get 30 minutes. But for Tim Hardaway, and to a lesser extent Knox, I find it hard to believe they're going to only be playing 28 minutes a night.
I think, generally speaking, he'll hold to that. What I do think is he's not going to be like a Thibodeau, right? Which is obviously the extreme end of the spectrum. He'll break that rule. It's not going to be like all year no one ever goes over 28. But I really honestly, especially like, I know they want to give Knox all the time in the world, but he is still super young, just turned 19, I believe, in August. Hasn't played a full NBA 82-game schedule. And I do think they're very wary of not having these guys break down, especially in this season. They're not trying to make any noise in the playoffs, so I don't think they're trying to like push any injury buttons there. I don't think 28 for everyone is realistic. More guys are going to deserve some more minutes, but I do think there's going to be a real concerted effort to keep their minutes down. And I think you might see them overall, I don't know how you would even quantify this, but like on average, maybe playing like less minutes per player than an average team. I'd be curious to keep track of what those actual numbers are, but I think he means it in the spirit of the comment, not necessarily like, I don't think he's going to hold to that letter every single game, if that makes sense.
I think that's probably a fair evaluation of how he looks to do that. It is definitely a change in New York, bringing some up-tempo play, a season without Kristaps Porzingis. Let's see the development of Ntilikina, let's see the development of Knox, diamonds in the rough, maybe like Alonzo Trier. James, you're going to have all that coverage for us over on Locked On Knicks this season, so thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with the season just 2 days away.
All right, thanks for having me.
Let me tell you guys about Vivid Seats, who is bringing you today's podcast. The NBA season is a couple of days away, and if you want to get to see the games live and in person, the best way of doing that is going and using Vivid Seats by downloading that app from the App Store, from Google Play as well. Go and get the Vivid Seats app. We all love seeing events in person, sporting events, concerts, musicals, theater, whatever it is. Vivid Seats is your place to go to get tickets to these once-in-a-lifetime type experiences. Go and download the app from the App Store or from Google Play. And in addition to the 100% buyer guarantee that Vivid Seats gives you, where all their tickets are backed by that guarantee, listeners to this podcast, Locked On NBA, get a special offer. $20 off any order of $200 or more for any new customer on Vivid Seats by using the promo code Locked On. That's one word. The promo code is Locked On. Use that on Vivid Seats on your first order. Get $20 off any purchase of $200 or more. The best selection, the best tickets, a great discount, a great guarantee. What more could you want from anywhere where you're buying your tickets? Vivid Seats is the place to go. Download the app, use the promo code, and go and see a great live event. Let's now bring in the host of the Locked On Spurs podcast, Jeff Garcia. It's been a casualty ward in San Antonio over the last week and a bit, with injury news coming left, right, and center. We've already had the news of the DeJounte Murray ACL injury, and then his replacement, Derek White. Jeff, he is out for, I guess, conflicting timelines. 6 to 8 weeks was the initial report. Popovich came out and said, "Nah, it's maybe going to be 4 weeks." What's the actual injury to Derek White, and how long are you expecting him to be missing from the lineup for?
Well, I'm going to take those questions in reverse. I'm expecting the Spurs to take a very extremely cautious approach to this, as they always do. So I'm going to roll with the first initial report, the 68 weeks. The Spurs have a history of not bringing back players coming off injury quicker. Usually they will just add on days just to be 100% sure. So I'm going to stick with the latter. As far as his specific injury is, it's actually a heel. There's a heel tear, and the muscles in there tore. So he's gonna have to, do his best to get back in the saddle soon, because let's face it, Josh, as you mentioned, this team is a walking wounded, but at the worst position it could possibly suffer at the point guard spot, considering the West is loaded with top-tier point guards.
So at the moment, with Murray out, who was slated to be the starter, and we're expecting him to take a big leap forward, White was then going to take over as the starter, and he'd shown massive steps forward in summer league and through the preseason. We thought, okay, well, there's a potential here for a Derek White type of breakout. Now both of these guys are out to start the season, so it looks like Bryn Forbes is going to be the starting point guard to begin the year, with Patty Mills coming off the bench. Personally, I don't really see Forbes as a point guard. I think he's more of a shooting guard guy that goes out there and gets buckets. Are we going to be seeing more of the distribution role fall to DeMar DeRozan, fall to Pau Gasol, who have really shown some of those chops in preseason as well? And what do you make of Forbes in that starting lineup?
Well, my previous conversations with Forbes directly, when in his rookie season, when he was shuffling between Austin Spurs and the parent home, San Antonio, he always would tell me that the Spurs wanted him to learn the point guard spot. And if you saw him during summer league action this past summer and in previous summer leagues, the Spurs always had him running that. So I think he'll be okay. Still not his natural position. Mills, been very vocal. He wants to come off the bench. In a practice earlier, well, time we listened to this show, maybe yesterday or today, he said he'll do what he has to do, but it's all hands on deck right now. And I think that's exactly the approach the Spurs are going into this season, especially at the point guard spot. It's all hands on deck. DeMar, if he's going to run the point guard, so be it. They're going to roll with Bryn Forbes. Not a natural point guard whatsoever, but he can light it up. Defensively, he's gotten better. Popovich has given him a hat tip to giving his effort and his pops it kicking butt defensively in camp, but can it translate into the NBA once the ball goes up and the regular season starts? That's a whole other matter. But right now, it's not looking good for the point guard spot. I would expect this be a point guard by committee. The Spurs obviously are probably looking at a different direction right now. They recently waived point guard Nick Johnson, who spent considerable time with the Austin Spurs, and he has some familiarity with the Spurs system, but they decided to let him go. So the Spurs are really going to just kind of ride this ship out. I think they're banking on the fact that White will probably come back sooner than later. I think that will help. But as of right now, it's by committee.
Okay, so it is going to be an interesting thing for this person. So let's move on to something. Before we do that, Rudy Gay also dealing with another heel injury.
There was
some concern maybe he might not be ready for opening night, which, again, no point guards, no small forwards on this roster, not even that Gay's a small forward at this point in his career anyway. But it looks like that injury doesn't appear too severe, but we have to remember, Jeff, that he missed time last year with that heel injury as well.
Yeah, he missed significant time last season. It's the same one. It's a case of a bursa. I think that's how you say it. The exact same injury from last year, the exact same foot, the exact same heel. So this Spurs team just simply cannot shake the injury bug. I've never seen it hit so hard in quite some time. I mean, the last humongous devastating injury was the Kawhi Leonard, Zsa Pachulia. But the Spurs have been relatively healthy for the past few years. So this is uncharted territory for San Antonio. Look, it's bad enough they had a horrible offseason. If you put everything together from Kawhi Leonard to Manu Ginobili retiring and now the injury bug, then they're coming into a new season with new roster. You mentioned DeMar DeRozan. You have Jakob Poeltl. You're bringing back Bellinelli. You got Quincy Pondexter. So this team, not only are they behind the eight ball in the sense that they're fighting their injury bug, but when are they going to become a cohesive unit? If all these pieces are missing left and right, my biggest fear is this team may be really behind the pack by the time they get everybody on the same page. It may be too little too late.
Well, Jeff, that's what I was going to ask you now. I know we've done season predictions before, and I've had you on my podcast as well talking about that. But now with all this happening, is this the year that you think that the Spurs are going to miss the playoffs?
I'm afraid it might be, and I think it will be. I think, it could come down to a situation where it could be that last month of the season and so many things have to play out. Example, a team A has to lose versus this team, and the Spurs have to win this. And, you know, I think it'll be like kind of those mathematical things, but I think it's going to get really, really close. You lost a lot of defense in the offseason. I'm talking a lot. And then you lost another key defender, DeJounte Murray, to injury for likely out the entire season. There's no Danny Green. There's no Kawhi Leonard. There's no Kyle Anderson, who I think gets lost in this shuffle.
Yeah, that's massive.
As far as the losing a key defender. Popovich recently spoke about Danny Green and Kyle Anderson after the Spurs preseason win over Orlando. He called them two of the best defenders he's ever seen gone out the window. He was very regretful that the team could not get those two guys to stay in San Antonio. So I'm afraid that the Spurs defensively are not going to be up to snuff to stop teams like the Warriors, like Houston, to a certain degree, maybe the Thunder, the Blazers. I expect the Spurs, if they're going to try to make the playoffs, they're going to try to be fighting for that 7th, 8th seed. Before the injury to DeJounte Murray, I had them fighting for maybe a 5 through 7. I got them now looking at maybe 7 and 8, and 8 being likely the position. But, you know, everything just remains to be seen. I don't know what's going to happen to Minnesota. They're having their internal implosion right now. Will things get smoothed over, and will they be that team that, you know, could be good in the West? I'm afraid it's going to come down to this, that the Spurs defensively just cannot get it done, and that will be the big Achilles heel for the Spurs this coming regular season. And defense wins championships. Right now, the Spurs don't look like they can defend on paper. We'll see how it all plays out.
Well, it is definitely going to be a season of change in San Antonio, playoffs or not. No Tim Duncan, no Manu Ginobili, no Tony Parker, no Kawhi Leonard. Injuries all over the place. It's one of the biggest challenges in Greg Popovich's career, and it could be a season of adaptation for the Spurs. But Jeff, you will cover all of that over on Locked On Spurs as the season starts and continues. So thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA as we get ready for the season to tip off.
Thank you very much, Josh.
I've got a great offer for you guys today. Now, I talk about it quite a bit. I tweet about it quite a bit. But you guys need to make sure you're getting a subscription to The Athletic. It's where all the smart sports stories are written. And now we can help you that with an insanely good offer. This offer from The Athletic is absolutely unbelievable. It's less than $3 a month. That is 40% off. And you can get this 40% off offer at The Athletic by going to theathletic.com/lockedonNBA. If you go there, you can subscribe for a year for 40% off, less than $3 a month, and you get the best sports stories all over the place. The NBA writers that they've brought on at The Athletic have been fantastic. They already had great writers, but recently Shams Charania is over there, Sam Amick, Zach Harper, Ethan Strauss, my mate Sam Vecenie, he's there as well. Frank Isola, they're churning out great content. I recommend going and reading all the cap previews that Danny LaRue's been putting out there. But recently, Marcus Thompson had a fantastic article about Patrick McCaw and his weird restricted free agency with the Golden State Warriors and the concern that his teammates are having regarding his future and what he's doing to himself with this protracted negotiation. So go check out Marcus Thompson's article on Patrick McCaw. Go check out Danny's stuff on the salary cap. Sam Vecenie covering the NBA and college basketball. There's so much at The Athletic. And now with Locked On NBA, you can get it at a crazy, crazy cheap price. No ads, no pop-ups, no autoplay videos over on The Athletic. It's just simple. Read the article. Read the best content. And it's not the basic game recap trade speculation. It's in-depth pieces going behind the scenes to find out all the information about your favorite team. There is almost 700 stories published every week over on The Athletic, and the only way to get those is by subscribing. So go to theathletic.com/lockedonNBA. That's theathletic.com/lockedonNBA. Save 40% off a subscription cost that's less than $3 per month. Go over and subscribe. You won't be disappointed. Let's go now to Miami to speak with Wes Goldberg of Locked On Heat about a few interesting things happening in the Miami Heat world over the last couple of days. Number one, Wes, we'll start with the Justice Winslow extension. I personally didn't expect this to be one of the earlier rookie extensions to get done, if it was going to get done at all. 3 years, $39 million with a team option on the third year. What's the general reaction, I guess, from you and for Heat fans in general about this Winslow contract? Because it seems like at this point that perhaps from what we've seen from Winslow, it's an overpay. But they're expecting bigger things moving forward with him and expecting him to take a leap into that value over the next couple of years.
That's exactly what they're thinking, right? I mean, you look at the extension they did last year with Josh Richardson, and there was a lot of similar feelings then. People were basically split on the Josh Richardson extension last October that basically equated to an average of $10 million over a four-year span. And Richardson, he had a breakout year. And now that extension looks like a bargain. I mean, he is one of the few bargains on the Heat's roster, to be honest. So you look at a guy like Justice Winslow, and yeah, he's not worth $13 million on average a year right now, the way he's been playing. Now, if he builds off of last year's playoff showing, and look, the Heat lost to the Sixers in the playoffs and basically got gentlemanly swept out of the playoffs. It really wasn't all that competitive, but one of the bright spots for Miami was sort of a minor breakout by Justice Winslow. He showed a tenacity and aggressiveness. He really had an identity that we hadn't seen up until that point in his career. So if he builds on that, then there is a real chance that this becomes a very fair contract or even possibly a bargain contract. And look, the Heat wouldn't have signed him to this extension if they didn't believe that Winslow is going to take a leap, if they didn't believe in their coaching staff's ability to get the most out of him and to develop him. So obviously, whatever the Heat have seen in training camp over the last couple of years, over the last couple of months even, and then even in this preseason, they saw enough to the point where they were comfortable giving him this. Now, is it a little bit of an overpay? Yes, at an average of $13 million a year, but as you noted, club option at the end in that third year. I think that they're paying up front a little bit for the right to, for the club option and for to get this to a shorter term deal so that they can get out of it by 2021. So that to me is why it's a little bit of an overpay. I expected something closer to the Richardson deal, about $10 million a year. If you're giving them an extra $3 million, I get it, especially if you want to try to keep them out of restricted free agency next summer.
The other stuff happening in the Miami Heat world, of course, is all about the Jimmy Butler negotiation. We had Pat Riley have to, and this is, yeah, the NBA, we know the NBA is hilarious at any point of the year, but the fact that Pat Riley had to come out and issue a statement saying that he did not call Tom Thibodeau any sort of expletive and negotiations had been cordial is right up there at this point of the year. But it does appear, Wes, at this point that the negotiations with Jimmy Butler coming to Miami have stalled, and Butler is looking like he's going to start the season as part of the Timberwolves roster. Now, do you think that that means the negotiations are dead forever, or is it just the current impasse based on what's happened over the last week? Where are we at with this Butler situation?
Before I answer that question, I just want to, again, Pat Riley having to come out with that statement and say he didn't call Tibbs an MF-er and then use that statement to say that he did call Danny Ainge, yes, that was incredible. Like, I love the NBA for that. Can you imagine if that happened in the NFL? Like, if Jerry Jones called, like, the owner of the New York Giants an MF-er or whatever? Like, it would be on ESPN all the time. Be like, oh my gosh, he's being so disrespectful. This isn't the way of the Shield, blah, blah, blah. And the NBA were like, this is great. We love Pat Riley. We love Danny Ainge. This is amazing. And you know Danny Ainge cracked up when he saw that.
Yeah, had
to. Look, I think Pat Riley, I wouldn't say that it's dead. Like, trades in the NBA, trade talks are resuscitated so easily that it's hard to call any trade conversations just dead. That said, I don't think Pat Riley is the one that's going to call the Timberwolves. I think he will field the phone calls. I think he will happily accept the phone calls. He will allow his secretary to patch them into his office. But I don't think he's going out of his way. I think that Pat Riley has made it clear, and maybe it was a little bit of posturing, but also, really, it's sort of the reality of his circumstance where he has to be comfortable with just having the roster as is, meaning no Jimmy Butler, meaning no real all-star in this group, and just sort of writing it out. Look, this Heat team was prepared to go into the season not with Jimmy Butler or any other disgruntled superstar willing to come to Miami. They were ready to go into this group trying to build internally, trying to get better with just that internal development, that building on the continuity and all that stuff. That was a real thing. That was their strategy for the last 2 years. And so I think they'll be happy doing that. I think there is enough faith. And look, that Justice Winslow extension proves it, right? Like, that, it's not all just talk. Like, actions speak louder than words. They just pay Justice Winslow because they believe him. That Justice Winslow contract is now almost impossible to trade this season. You're allowed to by league rules, but it's really difficult. Don't want to get into the whole cap stuff and bore your listeners with that. But it shows that they're willing to stand by this group. And I think Riley's happy to do it. Now, if Thibs or Glenn Taylor or whoever's in charge in Minnesota right now decides to call Pat Riley and say, you know what, that deal that we were talking about a few days ago sounds pretty good. Are you willing to go forward? I think Pat Riley will consider it. But until then, I think it's firmly in Minnesota's court. I think it's really with Jimmy Butler, and that's why you've seen Jimmy Butler act all crazy the last few days, is because he's trying to force Minnesota's hands, probably because he realizes the Heat are just going to be – Pat Riley's like, I don't want to deal with this anymore. Jimmy, it's up to you now.
Yeah, I can see that being the case as well. Butler orchestrated that stunt, and it may have ended up backfiring on him in terms of wanting to get out of Minnesota, just with the entire circus surrounding that situation. Miami is still probably the favorite to land Butler, but at this point, I think we're going to be seeing him suit up for the Timberwolves, and it's going to be a very interesting opening night for Minnesota on Friday when they make their home debut. We'll see how that all works out, of course. The Heat have got a very interesting roster. Lots of questions there. What was that, Wes?
And it's good for the Heat, really. No, it's good for the Heat. It's actually better that this goes into the regular season. A lot of people are wondering, like, a lot of Heat fans were concerned that if this doesn't get done in the preseason, then it carries over into the regular season. And if you do make a Butler trade, then you're kind of in the middle of the year trying to, find your bearings and acclimate Jimmy Butler and everything. Look, that's really not as big as a deal as people say it is. The Cavaliers made giant midseason trades almost every year LeBron was there and still made it to the finals. It's fine. I think it's almost better for the Heat because you get a real look at what Josh Richardson is. Because if Josh Richardson comes out and plays the way he did in the last two games of the preseason, putting up like 20 points a game and playing that all NBA level defense that we're accustomed to seeing from him, maybe Miami's like, you know what? Maybe we don't want to trade Josh Richardson. He looks really good. He's putting up Jimmy Butler numbers right now.
That's true as well.
It doesn't hurt Miami for this thing to go into, you know, December or January or wherever.
Well, make sure you guys are checking out Locked On Heat with Wes and David as they talk about Josh Richardson's ascension and if any Jimmy Butler trade does end up going down. Wes, thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
Thanks for having me.
There you have it, another edition of Locked On NBA for a Monday finished up. Make sure you are subscribing to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, leaving us a 5-star review as well. The NBA season, it's, I know I've said it plenty of times, but it is right here, ready to go. Couldn't be more excited for it. Check out our sponsors, The Athletic, at theathletic.com/LockedOnNBA and Vivid Seats by using the promo code there, Locked On. Go follow the network on Twitter at Locked On NBA Net as well. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.